So joining me on the New Wilkins podcast today is the sales whisperer, none other than Nancy Zern. Now, Nancy makes sales conversations comfortable and profitable, particularly if you are a service-based professional. Nancy teaches people how they can close, now get this, over 50% of their sales calls, get themselves so busy that they actually have to turn down prospects, and they get, believe it or not, to pick and choose who they bring on as clients. Now, I think we've both agreed that this is definitely a story worth telling. Welcome to the show, Nancy.
I'm excited to share with your audience all those amazing tips.
So 50% of sales calls closed. I'm going to start here as a skeptic, and I'm going to say, surely, Nancy, never, not possible.
You know, Neil, I'm glad you started there because it's a matter of having the right message that lands and attracts your right audience. And when you do that, sales is no longer a numbers game. Too many people think of sales as just putting all a bunch of people you can, everyone possible in that sales funnel, that pipeline. And most of the people are not qualified, as you know. And so what happens in the pipeline is you're busy qualifying and trying to sort them and so forth, et cetera, until maybe one out of 10 or two or three out of 10 fall out, right? Get closed. Well, what if instead of putting all that jumble mumble in the pipeline, you attract only quality people? Well, then it becomes a lot easier for you and for them to say, yes, this is a good fit.
I mean, it makes such logical sense. I mean, the simple way that you've just described that, it just feels like, well, yeah, obviously. So why have we all got so distracted by the numbers? I mean, I always call them from a marketing perspective, I call them vanity metrics. It's like, yeah, I made 50 calls, or yes, I've got another 200 subscribers, or, you know, we've got all these likes and follows, you know, in socials and all this kind of stuff. It's the big numbers that are distracting, it feels. Did you see it that way?
I totally agree with you, Neil. And vanity metrics is a good way of thinking about it, because why are we doing that? Because others are doing it. We're not being true to ourselves. We're not really looking at who am I, what am I about, what do I really want to accomplish? And instead, we're being led by the nose, by, you know, other people's success, which, by the way, most people gloss and most people elevate and promote themselves and project. It's really projection, something that we're not. And so the numbers then substantiate, validate, well, see, look at how successful I am. Well, success is not an outside job. It's an inside job. Would you agree?
Oh, I'm so glad you've gone there, because, yeah, this is such a personal thing, isn't it? Because I think for some people, they kind of get caught up in that sort of external trappings of, let's call it success. And it's like, look, I've got the car, I've got the house, look at all the vacations I go on, look at the watch on my wrist. And it kind of, that becomes then this external measure of benchmarking versus somebody else. And of course, somebody else has always got the faster car, the bigger house, the more glamorous vacation. You never win, do you, that way? This definition of external success, it's messy.
Very much so. And, you know, as you're speaking, I mean, I can't help but think in a more philosophical direction, because I'm a student of spirituality. And, you know, this physical material world is illusionary. And there is no satisfaction and no happiness in this material physical world. But we clamor for it. And all the rest of, and again, we project, and the rest of the people in our world are busy moving in that direction. So we think we're supposed to move there too. But again, it's illusionary. And what's real is, you know, truly, you know, what am I giving to others? And, you know, am I giving my best, and am I being a loving, kind soul as all of us go through this experience?
Do you feel that plays out in kind of sales and marketing? Because that kind of honesty, I'm feeling honesty coming through there when you describe that. Because if it does come from the heart, it's very from internal, the way we're describing, hey, I want to get into this professional relationship with you, i.e., probably attract you as a customer or a client. If it comes from a place of honesty and integrity, that surely must be part of this journey to a successful relationship there.
I totally agree with you, and that's the reason why, Neil, I stated that people can pick and choose who they work with, rather than, when we start off, I'm sure I was like this. I'm sure people in the audience are like this. Maybe you were like this too, Neil, where we were new and we would take just anybody and everybody, and we wanted all of them, right? And so we were all things to all people, except we weren't anything to anyone. And it was very hard for people to make a choice to work with us because we were all over the map. And again, when we are specific, we'll be terrific. And by honing in on and giving genuinely of what our gifts are, that is what matters. Just a moment ago, you mentioned your own gift of that of being an introvert. And introversion is a huge gift. I too am an introvert. I know that I have looked at the extroverted world and thought, well, gee, how do I manage and how do I navigate my way through this world? And I've chosen, a certain way. I know that in my work life, I am outgoing and, audacious, right? I wear a hat and it's red colored, so it stands out, et cetera. I know that I'm doing these things, but it's done on a conscious level in terms of what I'm communicating, rather than, again, like, please like me. That is a very poor way to make sales.
I want to come back and explore that gifts thing in just a moment, but I think, the way that you sort of said a whip might have applied to you as well, Neil, and it absolutely did. I think, back in the day, I started my career before marketing found me. It wasn't the other way around. Marketing found me rather than me find it. I started in recruitment. So after university, I was thinking I was going to get into a people development, sort of human resources kind of role, but didn't. I started in recruitment. And recruitment here in the UK is very much a sales role. And I found myself just being taught and just implementing the numbers game. If you make 50 phone calls, you'll get one appointment. From that one appointment, you might get 50% or 25% or whatever the numbers were of a chance of doing a deal. And so you literally just picked up the phone and made calls. And I think for me now, that's why I have such an aversion to the telephone. I just don't make calls. I just don't receive calls. I'd much rather do text chat or emails or, something like this where it's face to face. But it just became the numbers game. That was how back in the day we did it. And it wasn't playing to any kinds of gifts that you've described there. It wasn't adding any sort of value. It was just scattergun. Let's hope I can find somebody in a moment that just happens to have a need that I can then maybe skew my message to then sell into. The probability of that happening successfully is almost zero, isn't it?
Well, according to Chet Holmes, and I'm sure you're familiar with him, he would speak in front of, thousands of people, many audiences, and he would always ask, like, who came to buy? And at most 2 or 3% of the audience is looking today for what it is you or I or anyone has. Only 2 to 3%. He said another 7%, it was high on the radar screen. They were thinking about it. It was top of mind. Perhaps if you stumbled upon them and you made this irresistible offer, they might buy. Hence, 3 plus 7%, that's 10%. Do the math. 90% of the audience is not ready to buy today. Now, he broke that down further and even indicated that I think of that 90%, 30%, 40% would never ever do business with you, right? And so that leaves a certain group that you need to cultivate. They are in your community. Are they all perfect for you? Maybe not. Again, I really believe that there is, when you are very specific about who you serve, what you're about, your message, what service you offer. Those are the people that will want to work with you. And the others, you know, great, they may learn from you. You learn from them. We're all teachers, students to each other, right? However, they're not the right people, and let them go. You know, Neil, I also had an interesting experience. I did some telesales myself, and it was definitely a numbers game. I don't know about you, but they actually had the phone number and dialed it for you. And this was fancy equipment at the time. And so you just found yourself talking to people you didn't know, and you had a script, and the script was there that you read. It was so inauthentic. It was so much... I understand your aversion to the phone. I'm glad I'm not totally averted to the phone. I do like connecting with people, but it was a rough stand.
We will come on to the gifts thing. I've got it banked in my memory there, but I want to go there because that's a really fascinating one for me. But where does somebody then kind of stand in this situation? Because we're kind of evangelizing, it's about quality, not necessarily quantity. It's about alignment with, you know, like-minded organizations or people and stuff. But where does this stand when you don't have the control over your sales targets? I mean, it's fine if you are a business owner and you're making the calls because it's your business. Maybe it's a micro business, or you're a service providing, standalone consultant where, you know, your success is going to be related directly to how much effort you put into this. But if you're part of, say, a sales team, or you're part of a marketing organization, you probably have a boss who is setting you targets because they've got targets to hit. How does that play out? Because, you know, I can see now why the numbers game is, because unless I can see my people in my sales team really pushing, you know, the number of calls, and I don't see the evidence then that I'm actually going to be able to hit my targets, it gets quite ugly in that respect, doesn't it?
Yeah, I suspect, Neil, that the people in this audience, that they aren't like that, because they wouldn't be tuned in to you. And maybe we've all had that experience, which is the reason why we've gravitated in this direction, because it's not us. It's inauthentic. And the person I speak to, and I believe the person that you attract who is listening right now, is somebody who cares passionately about making a difference, doing good, bringing something of value, you know, to the world. And hence, it isn't about just, you know, like you say, shotgun approach. It's not about reigning all over. It's about finding the person who truly is open and wants to receive the gifts that you and I bring. And that is who's listening right now. That is who cares and wants the message that you're delivering, Neil.
Mm-hmm. So let's go into this word gifts then, because I know I said it once, you said it about four times already. It's clearly important. So what do we mean by gifts?
You know, it's fascinating that each of us has been gifted. You know, I know as a child, and you were probably told this, about how unique we are, how special. There's no one else on the world who has quite the same, you know, whatever. And usually it was physical features that were pointed out. Perhaps it was internal features, but it was mostly characteristics of that sort, right? That more the demographics of us. But it's the psychographics, it's that inner self that is truly the gift. And what is that gift? For many of us, we don't find it. We actually stumble upon it often. We don't know. I've heard so many people share, and I bet this is true for you. And as an audience listener, I want you to think about it for yourself. You start off in one direction, and again, the lure of the world and the magic and the mystery of all the exciting things you can do and be and have, you know, attract you. And off you go, you know, to make your mark in the world. And you stumble upon the fact that something that you take for granted, something that seems inconsequential, something that is so simple and easy for you to do that you take no notice of it, turns out to make a huge difference for people around you, and they ask for it. They come to you. They look for it. They beg you, would you please share it? And you do, because it's easy to do, right? And suddenly, at some point, maybe quicker, you know, slower, more quickly for others. I don't know. We realize this is our gift, and often we are in our midlife, perhaps even later, before we realize, wow, these are gifts that I have. And usually there are more than one, and they often kind of get woven together again in a very unique, special way. And if we're wise to it and we realize, yeah, this is a gift, then we head now in that direction confidently and using that gift that, again, came from nowhere, you know, but is the unique contribution that we have to offer.
How does that fit then? Again, going back to this analogy of working within a larger organization who obviously would have things like processes and systems and, you know, you describe their scripts, working to a script. Well, if we use the word script in its loosest sense, if I've got a number of different gifts or I've identified, even if I'm quite early in my career, that there's a certain special factor or feature of me that I've got here to offer. And I had a particular example from, you know, back in the day when I was just kind of leaving recruitment and moving into marketing, unbeknown to me, I replicated what a senior director in the organization I was with said, because in a meeting he'd said, right, well, I take X percentage of my time to sit and reflect and think strategically about the business and what we can do. And I happened to almost shamelessly, I would say steal, I'll say it, I shamelessly stole that particular quote and put it back into another meeting in the same organization. And I was absolutely shot down. And the reason being was I knew that was a gift that I have, which is to see a blank piece of paper and to be able to make sense of it, to be able to pull things together almost as an alchemist. I'm not an ideas person, but I can bring other people's collective ideas together and make sense of those and give real value. So I knew that that was also what I could do, even though I was early in my career. But the interesting thing was, it's like, no, we haven't got time for you to do that. Get back to your script. And it was a very interesting kind of almost sense check there that, okay, right, I'm being put back in my box, even though I'm actually offering up what a gift I have here. Mm-hmm. And I just knew intuitively, even though I hadn't practiced it, I knew it was there inside of me. And I've seen that now, obviously, decades later, play out, you know, millions of times for myself. But then it was something that wasn't acceptable because it wasn't part of the system or the process. So if somebody's listening to this and they're in a larger organization, they're working to some maybe brand guidelines or a script, or they have this sales process, how do you kind of rationalize that? Because if you have this offer that does make you unique and potentially you can feel that this is going to be really special to offer this out as part of the, you know, the sales engagement, but you're not really allowed to, how do you deal with that?
Well, you used the word rationalize. How do you rationalize that? And the thing is, there's no reason to it. But again, if I want to maintain my employment at the time, then I have to conform. And the more I conform, the more edgy I get, the more uncomfortable I feel, the more I realize there's a disconnect between who I am and what this organization is asking of me. So at some point, Neil, it happened to you, it happened to me, we leave, right? We make the decision to leave. Now, do we know exactly where we're going at the time we leave? Maybe yes, maybe no. You know, as we continue to look for that place that feels in harmony and in alignment with our values and again, our gifts, right? Where we can maximize and optimize who we are. So I know that anyone right now who is in a situation where you are rationalizing or compromising or, you know, making do, right? It's okay. It's satisfactory. Again, focus on the benefits and let go of what isn't so good. You're bringing to mind one of the authors that I respect a lot, Robert Kiyosaki, and perhaps you've read Cashflow Quadrant or Rich Dad, Poor Dad. These are some of the books that he's written. But what I was struck with when I read the books, besides understanding the difference between selling time for money versus using money to leverage, you know, and make more money, besides that key idea, he said that when you take a job, you need to take it knowingly. Like, what are the benefits I'm getting? Oh, yes, I'm getting a salary, and there may be other perks that come with it. But what are you learning? Choose that employment opportunity with thoughtfulness in terms of the skill that I can build or multiple skills. Hence, look, if you're in a position right now where you're feeling out of alignment with the values or the what you're asked to do, and you're not able to fully use yourself, where can you develop your skills? Because I know many people, Neil, will deliberately take a sales position, not because they truly want to sell whatever the gadget, widget, service is, but because they know they need the skill of talking with people they don't know, presenting things confidently. It's the skill building that prompts them to take that position. So that's what I would suggest to anyone listening in the audience right now. Think about the benefits that you can derive from that activity and focus on, again, your gain, because you're there, you're giving, right? What can you receive that will help you? Because when you leave that position, and invariably you will, you take yourself with you. You take the skills you've gained with you. Hence, what can you deliberately, consciously create for yourself?
So is it then that we're moving away from an employed mindset to more of a partnership mindset? Because it feels like this is a trade. You know, I bring my gifts to you as an employer. You give me the opportunity to learn, develop, and actually you'll pay me because I'm going to be bringing money into you as a business. So there's a real kind of trade or partnership here, isn't there?
There truly is. And I like how you said that, because I think that's what happens, is that we do evolve into, okay, now who is the right person that I can, you know, offer my gifts to, right? And initially as an employee, you know, it's that employer. And like you say, there is an exchange going on. And I'm suggesting that it be a more conscious exchange. I mean, as an employee, we get so excited, oh, I'm going to get a certain wage and it's going to have these kinds of perks, and that attracts us. But really, the bottom line is, what can we get from that activity that benefits us from a skill development point of view, from a character development point of view, and maybe character development, like you say, learning to work with others in a way that is mutually beneficial. That is such an important takeaway from that activity.
So it feels that then the requirements, if I'm looking to move because I'm not getting that in the current role that I'm in, and I feel that need to go somewhere else, you know, broaden my wings or whatever phrase that you'd want to use, it feels then that as much as the employer is looking to fill to a job description so that it's a very clear, here's the criteria that we're looking for, here are the kind of skill sets, the levels of experience. We're almost doing this then as the potential new recruit. We're doing this in reverse as well. So we're saying, right, are you the kind of organization that meets the criteria I'm looking for? What kind of culture are you? How are you actually going to manage me or not? Are you going to leave me to my own devices, or are you going to micromanage? And there'll be a spectrum there, obviously, as we all know, you know, different line managers have different styles to manage their people. So that's a real kind of trade, isn't it? That feels like that's something that we've almost got as an employee potentially. Here, we've got almost 50-50 in the game.
For sure. In fact, maybe employees don't realize the power we actually hold. And again, our employers actually making a compromise when they take us in, because they're looking at, okay, they have these kinds of skills, again, that we need filled, you know, like in our sales positions that you and I had, it was a certain kind of skill. And are we trainable and teachable? And trainable is an interesting word, because to me, training is all about animals rather than people. You educate people, but we train animals to behave in a certain way. So at any rate, our employers thinking through all this as they take us on, right? And can they mold and shape us to fit into that, you know, hole that they have in the organization. But we need to also think about what we're getting out of it too. And I'm also reminded that there's a very different mindset. And you experienced it when you gave that example of you repeated what your manager brought and you repeated it as an employee. No, they did not want that as an employee from you. They were not looking for that quality from you. Hence, you know, you found that it went nowhere. But, you know, as employees, there is a different mindset as we approach an activity than from a middle management perspective, or even as the founder or owner of the organization. Very different perspectives as we move throughout the organization as to what we're trying to accomplish, why we're there, and who can do it.
So when... If I found my gifts, then so there's maybe one or two things that I just inherently feel make me special, make me different. I feel very comfortable in the skin of, you know, projecting those out to the world and delivering that value. I've aligned myself now, so I've left the previous employer and I've gone to the new one. So I've aligned myself with a team of people or a culture that I feel very naturally aligned and at home in. How do I then start this journey of bringing these skills or these preferences or these gifts out in my customer or at this stage, probably prospect interactions? Because it feels okay. I did it in the interview. I've got the role. Yes, I've now spoken to my colleagues or my new peers and we kind of seem to get on. Yeah, they seem to like me. I kind of like them. So we're resonating. But now I've got to pick up the phone, or now I've got to go into that sales meeting that I've just been handed. How do I begin then to share these gifts? Because I don't want to just sort of stand up and say, right, I'm great at this. I'm brilliant at this. I can bring value to you. It's not like a checklist that you sort of tell, is it? This is going to be something a bit more subtle. So where do we begin?
And I would suggest we begin with transparency and to let people know. Obviously, the organization knows I'm new. They just hired me. They're meeting me. So I don't need to be transparent, so to speak, in that way. But I do need to be transparent with the prospects or the people that I'm meeting outside the organization. So, you know, let them know, you know, I'm learning. You can teach me right now. You know, I'm representing the company. I do know some information. I have some ideas. Clearly, they hired me because I, you know, they think I can do the job. And now, prospect, share with me more about what your experience has been. What are you looking for? Because as you know, Neil, it's all about our ability to listen and to be focused, centered on the other person, not ourselves. See, that is the kind of a... It's a tripping stone for almost everybody when we get self-conscious, when we think about, oh, how are they viewing me and what are they thinking of me? And, you know, there's an expression that what other people think about me is none of my business, you know, and to let go that focus on me and instead place it on my prospect. I'm here to serve you. So tell me more about you. Tell me more about how I can understand your situation. And maybe in understanding it, I realize that what I have to offer is a good match or not a good match. But either way, helping somebody and pull from them whatever that experience is, what they're looking for, is helping them and is doing a service. I always realize that good questions and helping someone think through their situations is a service. Now, they may or may not then move in the direction of working with me, but that doesn't matter. I've helped them just understand better their situation. And maybe for the next time, they can explain it more easily and hence find the right solution.
So this is giving then, not taking. It feels that this is not going into a potential sales opportunity here and actually thinking, right, what am I going to get from this? It's actually the flip side of it. It's actually very giving of your time, your attention, as you say, the active listening. It feels very different, I think, to how a lot of people will have been taught this word sales, which is you get out there, you find a prospect, you go sell them your product and service. Yeah, absolutely. Beating them down until they sign the contract or they part with their cash. it's the what you're advocating here, Nancy, is the opposite.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. When you have a transactional mindset, which is how we often think of sales, sales equals transaction, then, you know, that's the wrong approach. And it energetically, to me, it's a turnoff. When you think of sales as developing the relationship, helping to pull out whatever the situation is, bringing clarity, and then influencing people, it's a different mindset altogether. It's about building relationships. And I think you'll appreciate the latest book. It's an audio book that I wrote. It's called Stop Selling, Start Relating, because that's what it's about, Neil. It's about relating to people as people. I love when someone says it's not B2C or B2B, it's people to people. That's what we're talking about. And invariably, even though you're a representative of a larger organization, invariably, people are buying you. You know, how are you coming across? And if you're coming across as genuinely interested and caring and wanting to make a difference, and again, putting the focus on the customer, the prospect, that is a whole different kettle of fish than transaction. You're just an object that I'm trying to manipulate and get you to sign on the bottom line. Icky.
You use the word energy there. It's kind of like an energy flow. It's actually quite exciting though, isn't it? Because if you get into that, let's call it proper conversation. So it's not here, I've got this product with these features, these benefits, and here's the amazing world that you're going to see on the other side if you buy from me. That just doesn't even come into it because we're not even taught product and service yet. We're still building that relationship, yes, aren't we? And when we come back to that word partnership then, there's a really kind of almost in a level of excitement that we're beginning to ratchet up here that, hey, I've listened to you, but I think you could do this, or we could share that, or we could do it. So in partnership, it's almost you're building a solution is how it feels.
I love that idea for sure. You know, the other day I had a doctor's appointment, and this is a fairly new person in my life. This was only my second visit with him, but I was absolutely thrilled with our first visit. Why? He announced the fact that he was patient-centered when he walked into the room to meet me for the first time. And he truly has been patient-centered. And I've never done this before, but I actually sent him a thank you note. I never sent one to a doctor in the past, but he blew me away. And so when we met that second time, and again, I was letting him know how much I appreciated his manner, because again, he wasn't trying to sell me on a treatment plan. He was listening to me and asking what I needed and wanted from the visit, etc. He didn't want to accept any of this praise for me. And so finally I said, we're a team, we're in this together, you know, obviously for me to obtain good health. And he beamed because it was all about partnership. It was all about working together. And, you know, that's what gives me the most pleasure, too, when I know that I have talked to somebody and helped tease from them. Because sometimes we don't have the words for, you know, and words, by the way, are such a poor medium sometimes to express what's going on inside. And so when we find a way to communicate something and the other person like latches on, like, yeah, you get it. You understand me. It's such a delightful feeling. It's such a energizing feeling to know that, you know, that is maybe the gift that you gave at that moment. And I love when I can see that connection that happens, you know, heart to heart or mind to mind. But, you know, there's a connection that's made that's genuine. And both of us are on the same, you know, frequency at that moment.
So where does the whole product and service thing come in then? Because ultimately, we're still using this word sales. So ultimately, there needs to be at some point, I guess, in the appropriate situation, some kind of transaction. There needs to be a trade that actually happens. If it happens very, very clearly and very, very quickly and instantly almost, because it's the right time, it's the right place, it's the right offer, then everybody's going to be happy. It gets done and we move on. How do you kind of almost navigate this thing that it's okay, we've got a great relationship, the relationship's built, I get what you're offering, I can see that there's still an opportunity for me to come back and revisit you, et cetera, et cetera. But I appreciate the time isn't right for what we offer. Yeah. How do you keep somebody sweet in that relationship? Because I guess in some industries that could go on for months or even years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. And to me, one of the key features of this kind of approach is asking for permission. And it's such an easy thing to do, but it's often overlooked. And we leave that appointment or that conversation without asking for permission to continue. And that's all you need to do. You know, it happened to me just last week. I really hit it off with this individual. And by the way, it wasn't even a sales conversation. It was simply, we were one of those initial, let's get to know each other meetings. But as we talked, it became more and more evident, her questions about, well, what do you do? And, you know, what do you offer and so forth, that she was curious about how it applied to her. And I said to her, because this, again, it wasn't the right time, let's schedule a second appointment. Would you be open for that? And then we can take a look at what it would be like if we worked together. So it's just a matter of asking for permission to do a follow-up. And of course, scheduling it rather than leaving it to chance, like, okay, we signed off and now I send you an email or a voicemail saying, when can we meet again? Now, try to do it in that moment. You know, make a commitment that, you know, even if it's a month later or, you know, whatever time period, let's follow up on this conversation. So it's asking for permission.
It sounds a beautiful way of managing this relationship because, it, as you say, it's very open. It's very authentic. It has a really nice resonance to it. And so maybe over the course of a week, maybe I've done sort of 10 or a dozen of these kinds of meetings. I've got the permission for the next, the next appointment or whatever, but I haven't actually done any deals. And at the end of the week, I need to report to my sales director the fact that, hey, I've built all these lovely relationships. And yeah, in the future, we've got some amazing things that are going to happen. And my sales director is there and she says, but what have you what deals have you kind of signed this week? Well, I haven't actually, but I've got some lovely relationships. Okay, right. Here's the ticket. You're out. You know, is the probably the harsh commercial reality, particularly in sectors where it is quite cutthroat, it is very numbers driven. How do I negotiate that? Because this probably in the medium to longer term will be the way that is going to make me the most successful salesperson in the organization. But this week, I'm at the bottom of the league table. How do I negotiate that kind of conversation with my director?
So this is where you want to have benchmarks and milestones. And, you know, we're at the beginning here. We're at stage two, stage three, stage four, and have a variety of benchmarks along that pipeline, that sales funnel, so that you can say, these are, you know, I've had so many introductory calls, I've had so many secondary meetings, and so you can actually measure how we're moving people through that pipeline. And usually a savvy, manager will understand, granted, they're feeling the pressure too, because, you know, their manager is saying, well, we've got to have X amount coming in, it's not coming in. So of course, they're putting pressure on their underlings. Most organizations, there is a certain timeline that, you know, it takes a certain amount of time, especially if it's a big ticket item, there are budgetary constraints and businesses need to allocate the funds to go forward with that kind of service. So it's those sorts of things that I think can help. But again, and I'm speaking now to members of the audience, if you're in the middle of something like that, and you know that your insides are churning, and this is not the right situation for you, then it may be time for you to honestly face the fact that, there is a better opportunity elsewhere. And not to feel concerned that, oh, I got to do anything I can to maintain my job. No, remember, the job is not it. It's what you're learning is it. What are you developing personally, internally? That's what's it. And I know there are constraints. We need to bring in money to support ourselves and our families, you know, but we also, that's not it. It's about, again, our own growth and reaching our potential.
Just one, I guess, final question in this kind of this mix or this journey from, you know, completely naive, it's all about the script, all the way through to this beautiful crafting of the relationship now with all of the prospects and all of the existing accounts. What point does it become where you feel that it's the right thing to say, no, I can't, even though we've had these multiple conversations, I can't actually now do business with you for reasons X, Y, and Z. When do you kind of know it's time to step back, even though you've invested as a salesperson a lot into this relationship? What kind of signs do you see to say, no, it's actually not quite right?
So if you're representing yourself and you know that you're the one providing the service and hence it doesn't feel like a good match, then in all candor and honesty, you need to, who would be a better match? And you might say that here are some areas where, you know, I know that I fall short. It's about me, not the other person, you know, where I am unable to bring to the table what you need. Because again, I'm focused on serving that person. And if I'm focused on serving them, but I also know it's not right for me, then it's a matter of who else? Hence, I need to make relationships, beautiful word again, right? I need to have established relationships with other providers who may do similar things, but have a different personality or style or service offering, and hence it's a better match, or I think it could be a better match. So I don't want to just leave somebody hanging like I'm not the right person and good luck, find someone. But no, again, there's a relationship that's been established. You know, hopefully I do care that this person is well served. Hence, I'm looking for the right, again, connection, relationship for that prospect.
It feels to me that there needs to be a new word. Sales kind of has so much baggage and so many kind of connotations, if you like. I think that's the way that you're describing this relationship building for commercial benefit of all, I guess you could call it that. I'm trying to find the words here, but it feels more than sales. It feels so much deeper, so much more intrinsic in business development and growth than that word sales, which, as I say, has so many, you know, for a lot of us, so many connotations which don't necessarily support it in this new world. Is there a new word? Is there something we could describe this as? I know I'm putting on the spot for this one, but it just feels it's different, doesn't it?
I'm laughing because I have queried my audience multiple times, and I'd be curious to know from your listeners as well what other words you use. And there are words like share and educate and inform, and you know, but my particular audience, they don't sell. They're professionals, they're service-based. They don't think of themselves as salespeople. They think of themselves as lawyers and financial advisors. And again, they're not selling people, but they have a service to offer, you know, and hence, you know, we need to discover whether this is a service that you need and want, especially want rather than need, because that people make mistakes thinking that, oh, you know, I'm a web designer, hence you need a web. No, you know, a website. No, they don't. They may be very happy with, you know, a landing page and they don't need a website, etc. So it's about wanting something. And so I'm laughing because I haven't found the word. I asked people what words they use and it's all over the map. I don't know another word. And by the way, sell and sale, it's a four-letter word.
Nancy, this has been just really fascinating to meet a like-minded soul who kind of really believes in this kind of authentic way of having these kinds of conversations to do trade and to do business. It's so refreshing. So thank you for all your work. And we want to obviously direct people towards both the book and to you on LinkedIn. Is the LinkedIn link that I'm going to put into the notes for this particular episode, is that the best way for people to contact you?
Absolutely. I usually post 3 to 5 times a week. I often have a live stream, so, you know, feel free to, you know, participate and be present. So, yeah. And I, oh, by the way, I also do surveys once a week. I have a poll. So I'd love people to, you know, weigh in and tell me more about who you are and what you are looking for.
Wonderful. So if anybody's listening to this and thinks, I need this new way of doing business, I need to get hold of Nancy, check the episode notes below and get in touch. Nancy's given you an open invitation there to make a connection. And who knows, this could be the next authentic relationship that you'll be having in your business. Nancy, thank you so much for your time and wisdom today.
Well, thank you. And thank you also, Neil, because you do such an amazing job of creating and finding amazing guests and bringing from them, you know, some interesting aspects and elements. It's a very thoughtful discussion that you lead, and your audience is very lucky that you're there guiding them.
Oh, very, very kind of you to say so. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
To your sales success.